Okay, so last time we began looking at the three Gemaras in Bava Basra, one of which said that it was problematic to get staka from non-Jews. Unclear whether the reason is problematic is because they're not obligated, or more likely they are obligated, and that's the problem, because you don't want to give them schar. That was the Gemara in Gimel Dalet. Then there was the Gemara in Daf Chet. It doesn't say which non-Jews, we don't know. Definitely evil people like Nebuchadnezzar. Sure. Daf Chet, Shmuel Malka's mother, Ephrahormiz, gives tzaka for mitzvah rabba. No one even challenges it. Instead, they start dunning in the lamdos of, oh, okay, what does she mean by that? And they end up giving for pidyon shvuyim. So in that Gemara, there seems to be no problem in at least giving it for pidyon shvuyim. Daf Yud, Yud Aleph. So, what was the problem there? Also with Ephrahormiz, then in the end they took the money from Ephrahormiz, but they gave it to non-Jews, right? So we have three Gemaras that one doesn't even have a problem with non-Jews giving us tzedakah, one which does, and one which sort of does, but you can solve the problem if you give it to non-Jews, right? Very complicated, and yes, it might depend on what tzedakah is, because in one of them it's talking about pidyon shvuyim, in two of them it's talking about tzedakah proper, presumably. Well, one of them, the Herod part of it, is talking about the Beit HaMikdash, but Nebuchadnezzar is talking about tzedakah proper, probably. And then we have to talk about which non-Jews. In one of them, obviously, we're dealing not with just with a non-Jew, but a very evil one, Nebuchadnezzar. Obviously, we're not the biggest fan of Nebuchadnezzar, as things go. And the other two, we're talking about Ephrahormiz, but okay, she's an idolatrous woman, but more than that, we don't know. Right, she comes up a lot. Gemara seems to have a lot of dealings with members of Chazal. Those were the problems we really began with. And yes, as you probably guessed, I like focusing on problems first, so that I can get you to predict what the Rishonim and Achronim say. I've said this before, I want you to think like them. So as we noted, especially in the Gemara in Daf Dalet, Gimel Dalet, the first Gemara we saw in Bava Basra, on the one hand, you might say the fire and brimstone opposition to taking money from non-Jews might lead you to believe that non-Jews are not chayiv in staka. On the other hand, the issue at hand in the Gemara seems to be that we don't want to grant non-Jews the opportunity, at least a non-Jew like Nebuchadnezzar, the opportunity to get reward, which would imply that they're getting reward, which would imply that they are getting a mitzvah, they are chayiv. So the first question, methodologically speaking, we need to, yeah. Good, so we can talk about maybe they're not chayiv, but they get a mitzvah, right? Might have to come up with a middle formulation, 100%. So, the first question, therefore, we have to ask to figure out what's going on is, okay, clearly in the background of this Gemara is the question of, is there a chiyuv, mitzvah, or nothing? Those are our three possibilities for non-Jews to give tzedaka. So we need to ask, okay, are they chayiv in staka? Right? We need that in the background. That's the first question. So, that was the first set of sources that I gave you. So the first Gemara I gave you is Sanhedrin, Nunvav, Amud Aleph to Amud Bet. And there, the Gemara brings the majority position that how many mitzvot are non-Jews obligated in?
Seven.
What are they? Someone read them for me. Source 2, Roman numeral 2, B1. Okay? For this one, I tried cutting out Surat Adaf, so that you see what the Gemara looks like. I can always switch back and forth. I don't know. Trying different things. No one's taking it. I don't know. I don't have. There's no science to this. Okay. I don't know. Okay. I do what I do. Sometimes. I don't know. I did this over the summer, you know, because I found this sugya fascinating. So I made it into basically an outline form. Okay, I don't know. You don't like it, I'll do it differently next time. I don't know. What do you want from me? Okay. Yeah. Okay, Andrew, you want to take it away? Good. So the first Gemara brings the position that there are seven mitzvot b'nei Noach. Okay? Don't eat a live animal. Don't steal. I'm not doing this in order now. Let me do it in order. Right? Don't steal, don't kill, set up a court system, don't worship idolatry, don't be involved in illicit sexual relations, and don't blaspheme. Did I get them all? I think I got them all. All right, that's the seven. But then the Gemara Nun Vav Amud Bet tells you that there were some people who introduced more obligations. So, continuing, Rav Chanina introduced what prohibition? Andrew, continue. Afal Hadam, Minachai. What else are they prohibited about? Prohibited from? From a living being, right? That's different than Iver Minachai. It's the blood from a living being. Those are distinct. Okay.
I'm just curious. Does that involve all
Minachai, Minachai.
Okay, but once they, if they
they're dead, then it's fine. Yes. And what? It's like taking blood from someone, yeah. Yes. You don't have to be doing this vampire style for it to be problematic. Yes, you get it from a blood bank, exactly. Right? You get a... Yes, during lockdown, you get it ordered to your house, left outside the door. Yes, fine. That's Rabbi Chanina ben Gamla. What about Rabbi Chidka? What does Rabbi Chidka add? Siros. What's Siros? Thank you. Castration. There's a prohibition against castration. Or as Rami said, snip, snip. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that very formal definition. But yes, you are correct. Good. And yes, as someone asked, this is part of the issue, is if you think it's serious, it's not just for yourself, it's on animals. Also, we're not allowed to neuter animals. Right, so this is a relevant question. Yes. What? Okay. I don't think they're using that definition.
Okay.
I don't think when they're translating it specifically referring to. I did not know that distinction. That and I don't know if that holds over in the formal. Okay. I don't know. I don't know. I will. I can look into it, but I don't know. Yes, I assume that's what they're using is the generic definition. Yeah. Okay. Rabbi Shimon adds. Yes, what is that?
Magic.
What?
Magic.
Magic, thank you. What is magic? I don't know. Right? The Rambam tells you it's a farce. It's all sleight of hand with the intent to lead people astray. The Ramban will tell you, no, it means magic. Like magic, I don't know, like Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, magic. What? Well, there's difference between magic, necromancy, they're all different types of magic. You think these don't come up, you know, you would be wrong. I once got a shayla about this. Yes, it was about palm reading, okay. So of the very long list of different things, but whether it was us or to go to a palm reader. Oh, that's fun. Wonderful. But yeah, I got a shayla about this once. A friend of mine who was in Princeton, they were for a creative writing class. They were told to just do different things in New York City to get inspiration for creative writing. And one of them was go to a palm reader. And the question was, are you allowed to go when everyone going thinks it's a farce and they're just going for a creative writing class? Are you allowed to go? So I got this shayla a few years ago. Fun shaylas. Fun times. I did Paskin for him. I said no. no, don't go. I said no. It's not actually a Pashat Sugya, right? I don't think it's a violation of Kishuv. I think it is a violation of Tamim Tiyah Hashem Elokecha, which the Rambam says that there's a more expansive prohibition, even the things that don't technically go under it. There aren't so many modern tshuvot on it, not surprisingly. There's basically two in the 20th century. But that was basically the conclusion of Chaim David HaLevi. And anyways, it was a fun times. And then when I emailed it out on a rabbinic listserv, someone said, hey, I wanted to do that on a date once. I asked Rav Schechter. He said, don't do it. So that was my... okay. Fine, so Kishuv. And then the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi expands it and says that Kol Amar B'Parshat Kishuv Ben Muzer Alav. And that it's not just Kishuv itself, it's all those different magic things in the Parsha, including Lo Yimatzeh B'Chal Mahavir Bino Vito Va'esh, passing your children through fire, Kosem Ksamim, magic type 1, Me'onein, Menachesh, Mechashev, Chover Chaver, Shol O, Vidoni, Vidoresh, Ametim. These are all different types of magic, necromancy, all that stuff. Okay? You can try to figure out all the exact differences between these. The sugyas do go into what the differences are, but that's not our interest right now. I know you're fascinating, Yonatan. If you talk to the dead by putting a bone under your armpit, putting it under your tongue, make it come out of your makam hamila, all these different fascinating different things that happen in the Gemara. What? No. Well, it carries the death penalty with it, so I would suggest not doing it. You're correct. That doesn't mean it's less usher. Okay. And his proof is that the end of the parsha says that this is why the non-Jews were driven from Israel, right? These seven nations, and they go all these things, and you don't get punished unless you're warned. So from here he derives that all these things are prohibited for non-Jews because they're punished clearly was usher. Okay. What does Rabbi Elazar then add? Elazar Omer, Af Al Ha? Af Al Ha Kilayim. Kilayim too. But specifically, which Kilayim? In Asur El Baharvat Beima Verkavad Ailan. With, no, sorry. Mutram Beneinoch Lavosh Kilayim, Lazor Kilayim, and Asur El Baharvat Beima Verkavad Ailan. They're allowed to wear shatnez, and they can plant shatnez, but they can't graft trees or crossbreed species. Okay? This one actually is a stira in the Rambam. In one place the Rambam doesn't paskan this way, in one place he actually does. And then the Gemara says, what's the source for all of this? So, what's the source? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rinan, Emili, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Kra. Who wants to take the source text? Andrew, you want to finish it up? This is the Gemara, continuing, right? So, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Kra, what's the source text for the mitzvot b'nei Noach? So, Vayitzav Hashem Elokim al Adam Lemor Mikol Eitz Hagan Achol Tochel. And God commanded Adam, don't eat from the fruit. And Chazal Darshan, from every word in that pasuk, a different mitzvah. Vayitzav Eil Adinin. He commanded, that means they have... They have to set up a court system. Right, and he keeps going through Hashem. They can't curse him. He proves it from everything as possible. Okay, you know, let's leave it here for a minute. So we stop at this Gemara. Are non-Jews chayev in Staga? Explain your lack of clarity on it, Yonatan. If we stop here.
Are they chayiv? Seemingly
not. Okay, they're chayiv, seemingly not. Why? Very good. It's not mentioned. Not in the seven and not in the expansions. Right? Not the people who think there's 8 and 9 and 10. No one ever says they're chayiv in tzedakah.
But likewise, I think we could rule out that there is a specific issue of them being
We haven't even talked about an issue. I want to know if they're chayav first.
I don't feel like we know that they're not forbidden.
Why do we know that?
Because it doesn't mention it there.
This is not all of Shas. two blocks later, you'll find out they're not allowed to learn Torah, and they're not allowed to keep Shabbos. And it carries with it Chayiv Misa.
Is that like an actual Chayiv Misa?
No, the Rambam says it's their Chayiv Misa, but we don't do anything to them. And I know I'm not going to get into that sugya now. Yes? Oh, very good. So Yohanan says, well, at first glance, you'd say they're not chayev at all, because it doesn't mention it. But Yohanan's already thinking like the Sefer HaChinuch, who says, whoa. The seven mitzvot aren't seven mitzvot. They're seven categories. There's seven categories of mitzvot. So maybe this isn't a proof. Maybe tzedakah is an independent chayev for non-Jews. But maybe it is a chiyuv. Very good. So that, looking at this Gemara, that's what we're left with so far. It doesn't say it, so you could either conclude Yehonatan possibility one, which is they're not chayev, or Yehonatan possibility two, which is they are chayev, but not as an independent mitzvah, but as a subcategory. Very good. But this gets even more complicated by the Gemara on Zayin Amud Bet. So in the... I know some of you found this Gemara a little bit confusing, so let's... The Gemara is... I was nice. I thought I was being nice. I cut out just a few lines, but it's a very long piece. But the Gemara is dealing with the question of whether the mitzvah of dinim applies to all non-Jews or only to men. And are women chayavot? So the Gemara assumes that women are not obligated. They're not involved in setting up the court system, so they're not obligated. Okay, so the Gemara says, is that true? Yeah. So it would mean that if the society is derelict in their responsibility, the onus doesn't fall on their shoulders. Right? So like the Rambam, for example, claims in Perek Tet, Halacha Yud Dalet of Hilchot Malachim, that the reason that it was legitimate for Shimon and Levi to massacre the city of Shechem was because since Hamor had sanctioned Shechem's actions against Dina and didn't stop him and didn't punish him, and the whole city didn't do it, so he violated Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach by kidnapping a woman, raping her, whatever, and no one did anything, which shows that they violated Dinim. And since all the Sheva Mitzvot carry with them the death penalty, by not enforcing the consequences against Shechem, they became liable to the death penalty. But as you see in the story, only the men are killed. Right? So that's what it would look like. So in the middle of that sugya, the Gemara says as follows, Masiv Rav Humnuna. V'isha lo mifkida. Is it true that women are not obligated in establishing dinim? V'achtiv, but doesn't the pasuk say ki yidativ l'man asher yitzaveh? Good. Now, what's the next word? Since at this point it's very unclear what exactly the proof is. What pasuk is he quoting? Breshit yudchet. Very good. What pasuk? Yudchet, right? This is very good. Breshit Yudchet, and Yudtet, right? This is the second pasuk, Yudtet, but fine. Yudchet, Yudtet, you're right. Where God is explaining why He chose Avram, and why does He say? Why did He choose Avram? Ki yidativ l'man asher yitzaveh. Dot dot dot. What's the next part of it? Right? To do what? That I know he's going to command his children, his family, to go b'derech Hashem, latzot, tztaka, u'mishpat. To do tztaka and mishpat. So what's the question? That, not yet. The Gemara's question. You're 100% right, but what's the Gemara's question? Avram is earlier on, he's before Matan Torah, and he's saying he's going to teach seemingly his whole family, latzot, tztaka u'mishpat. Doesn't it sound like they are therefore chayavot in mishpat? And what does the Gemara answer? Humotiv la v'mefarek la. Banav Ladin, his male children are obligated in justice. Beito, the more expansive family, Litzdaka. Everyone is obligated in this thing called Staka. So if we just stop there, is there room to believe that non-Jews are obligated in Staka? Is there room? I just want to answer that question first. Yes, good. But, now the buts. Yes, Yonatan.
How can we say that, how can we bring this as a proof that there is an obligation, because his Abraham commanded his household to do this, kind of like a commandment from God or something?
No, because God says, I'm choosing Abraham because I know he's going to tell him to follow Derech Hashem. That's not necessarily
like a mitzvah or even an obligation.
Correct, but it's revealing this is the way of God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's definitely, I would say,
Yonatan, you're always like 5 steps ahead of me, okay? Right? Good. Very good. Okay, Yonatan is going to say, very good. Yes, it sounds like they're saying they're chayiv in staka, but he asked 2 good questions. He said, first of all, who said this staka means what we normally mean by staka is charity? And the second is, who says this is talking about chayiv? Maybe it's talking about there is a value to it, but that doesn't mean it's technically obligatory. Yes and yes, those are both possibilities. Thank you. Very good. So, let's focus just on what we've seen so far. So as we said, the prior questions you really need to ask to fully understand our Gemara and Bava Basra is, are non-Jews obligated in tzedakah? Even if they're not obligated, is there a mitzvah? Or is it totally valueless? The first Gemara that lists the Sheva Mitzvah Menach or possible expansions mentions nothing about Staka, which implies that non-Jews are at least not Chayev. Maybe there's no value at all. However, one could always parry, as Yonatan did, and say no. Staka is not an independent obligation, but maybe it's a subset of something else. The second Gemara, Sanhedrin Nun Zayin Amud Beis, seems to say that women are Chayev because presumably men and women, are not equally chayev in dinin, but they are chayev equally in tztaka, which possibly indicates that non-Jews are chayev in tztaka, possibly indicates that there's a value, but not a chiyuv, for them to give tztaka, and possibly tztaka here doesn't mean tztaka, it means something else, in which case this isn't a raya for anything. All those are possibilities. And remember, once we finish all this, we're going to have to plug it back in to the Gemara and Bava Basra. But you're 100% right. These are the possibilities on the table. For the record, when we finally start looking at Rishonim, I really don't want to have to say that the Rashi is Yonatan possibility 1, and the Ran is Yonatan possibility 2. So I would encourage other people weighing in. You know, Rami, you had many possibilities during Seder, so... What?
They're all equal.
Okay, good. So Rami doesn't like any of them. So good. At least I have that. Rami said, I hate everything on it. Don't worry. Good. We'll see people who really don't like any of this, but that's good. At least I have another voice. Good. Oh, we haven't even gone to the problems yet. Whoa. You're ahead of me also. Stop being ahead of me, okay? Good. One more Gemara in Sanhedrin. Adam, I know you didn't like this Gemara. Good, so take it away. 26B, correct. I mistyped, but yes, the one that says Chaf Vav Hamad Bet. That should have tipped you off. It was 26B, but the one in front of you, yeah. Amar Rav Nachman. Okay, fine. So then let me read it, okay? Let me just read this small passage. I know it's a little bit hard to read. Didn't come out as clear as the others. Amar Nachman, Ochle davar acher psulalin la'ed. Those who eat something else, which normally means pig in Gemara, but here it doesn't, because obviously people who have pig are violating an Isser, so that's not a chiddush, are invalid for testimony. And the Gemara says, Hani mili b'far hesyav abitzin alo, and the reason the Mepharshim all assume this can't mean pig is because there's no difference between eating pig in public or private. That's both problematic. Don't do it. You now learned something radically new, I know. No one knew this. No one knew this before. Don't eat. And even if he does it in public, that's only if he could have done it in private. But if he can't, the only way to do it is to do it in public, it's fine because it's his sustenance. So Rashi and Tosfot both agree. What is it talking about? Rashi says, Mikablei tzedakah min ha'nochrim, taking money from non-Jews, to have a chilul Hashem, because it is a chilul Hashem. Now, let's assume for a moment Rashi and Tosfot are correct. In this Gemara, what do you think? Non-Jews, chayiv in tzedakah, not chayiv in tzedakah?
I'm unclear.
Yeah, I have no idea. Why only in public? I know Rami hates everything about this. Why only in public? If it's usher, it should be usher in private, right? If it's not usher, right? So why does public change that? Why is it a chil Hashem? What is the chil Hashem? Right? No idea. Literally, we have no idea. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be real with the chil Hashem? Because if we go back to the third Gemara we did, with the two of them, one accepted and one didn't accept it, and the other one gave it to the non-Jews, like the whole problem he said was taking money and not giving it back to like the non-Jews.
Well, no, it sounded like he wanted to give it to the non-Jews to minimize the schar.
Oh, right.
Right?
I thought it was also something about
oh, maybe that's what it is. Very good. That could be part of what it is. We have to figure out, what is this Chilul Hashem? Right, Rashi just asserts it's Chilul Hashem. Yeah. Oh, good. Why would we want to minimize the schar? So, in the case of Nebuchadnezzar, it sounds like we don't want, because he's going to beat us. The less schar he has, the less chance he can beat us. Right? Which might indicate that it's only some non-Jews. Okay? Well, like I said, before we even get to the question of minimizing the schar, we got to figure out what are they getting reward, right, for? What's going on? Okay. So, I know that... is this where everyone got? This is about as far as anyone got, right? In the sources? Okay, good. So here's the options, okay? We can either work through the Gemara and Erechin together, or we can... I can leave the Gemara for you for tomorrow in Erechin to fill in the sugi here, and we can start to play with the Gemara in Sanhedrin already, and we can work the Rishonim together, and then we can go back to Erechin tomorrow. What would you rather? You want to do the Gemara in Erechin? Okay. So we got one more Gemara that complicates this picture, and that is the longest of all the Gemaras, which is... not of all the Gemaras in Shas, but of this sugya, it is the most extensive. It is the Gemara in Erechin. It's the Gemara in Erechin commenting on the Mishnah in Shkalim. Okay? So the Mishnah in Shkalim, at the top of the next page, tells you that Hakuti Hanachri v'Hakuti Shishaklu Ein Mikablin Miyadan. That if a non-Jew or a Kuti give the Machatzir HaShekel, so we don't accept it. Nor do we accept the karban. What are the kinei zavin? What's a kain? Shiluach hakain? It's the birds. It's the birds that are brought when someone finishes the tuma process of zava. What's zava? Ziva? Which one? Zava, thank you. What is that? What? No. It's Dafka, not that. Close, but not that. It's the abnormal sight, right? The abnormal seeing of blood, which is not menstruation. Regular menstruation is Nida and requires just going to the mikvah. But Zava is for a woman is seeing blood at an abnormal time. And therefore, there's if she sees it for one day, she's a Zava Ketana, she needs to wait one day. 2 days, also Zava Ketana, it's called Yom Roa Yom Keneged Yom, Shomer Yom Keneged Yom. She sees it for 3 days in a row, so then she's a Zava Gedola, and then she needs to wait 7 clean days, meaning no blood whatsoever, but a mikvah and a karban. Okay? For a man, it's any abnormal discharge. Right? A normal discharge would be keri, right? Would be a seminal emission, which requires just mikvah. But abnormal emissions would be Zav. Okay? So Zavin Vizavot, Kine Yoladot, what's that? What's a Yoladot? What? A woman who gives birth, right? When she finishes her period of Tahara, so she brings Karbat out, right? A woman, when she has a boy, she's Tame automatically for 7 days and Tahara after 40 days. And if she has a girl, she's Tame for Tamea for 14 days and Tahara for 66, meaning the majority of the 80. It's set. It's 40 total and 80 total. 7 and 33, 14 and 66. So at the end of that period, either the 40 or the 80 days, she brings a karban. She can't go to the Beit HaMikdash the entire time, but the end of it, she brings a karban. So those karbanot. Out. What's a chatat? Yes. I'm just reading through the Mishnah. Chatat, what's a chatat? A sin offering, which is brought when you do what? Sin? Bishogeg, accidentally. With what type of sin? One that if you would do it on purpose would carry with it either karet or the death penalty. Asham. What's an asham? What's an asham talui, let's say? What? Which is what? What? No, not on purpose. No. An asham talui is if something that if I did on purpose I'd get karet. And if I did it by accident I'd bring a chatat. If I'm not sure whether I did it, I bring an Hashem Talui. I don't know. I don't know. I might have done it. I'm not sure. Very good. The Gemara asked the same question you did. Is what does it mean, I'm not sure? Is all non-surers created equal? No, not all I'm not sure is created equal. Very good. So the Gemara has different cases. One is called, right, when you have one piece, I'm not sure if it's kosher or not. Or I have two pieces, one of which I know is not kosher, one of which I know is kosher, and I eat one of them. Right? Those are different types of sfeikot that the Gemara deals with. Both of them are relevant. Fine. Those we don't accept. Aval, but the Mishnah says, what do we accept? Nidarim unidavot mikablin miadan. But voluntary offerings, a neder and a nidava. What's the difference between a neder and a nidava? Right, one is, correct. One is I say, I'm going to bring this karban to the Beit HaMikdash. The other is I say, I'm going to bring a karban to the Beit HaMikdash. The difference is, if the animal dies, so if I said this animal, nothing I can do, it's gone. If I say I'm going to bring an animal, I have to replace it. Good. Zaklon, this is the rule. Those we accept. Kol shenadar v'nadav mikablin miadan. Anything which is voluntary, non-Jews are allowed to contribute to the Beit HaMikdash. Kol she'ein nidar v'nidav, and anything which is not voluntary, but is obligatory, and mekablin miadan. They can't volunteer an obligatory offering. It doesn't work that way. V'cheinu mifaresh al yidei Ezra, and that's what Ezra says. Shenemar. So this is a very dramatic scene. What is he about to invoke? What is the mission about to invoke from Sefer Ezra, since all of you are Bikim and Sefer Ezra? Have never heard of Sefer Ezra, the other alternative there. So in Sefer Ezra, the Persian emperor grants the Jews the right to build the Beit HaMikdash. This emperor's name is Cyrus the Great, Koresh. He says, God has told me that I should let you go build your Beit HaMikdash. Yonatan's looking, really? That's what he said? Yes, that is indeed what he said. And that's in fact what we have records of from Koresh in the Cyrus Cylinder, where he in fact says exactly that. So that's the only difference, that in Tanakh it says Hashem, and in the Cyrus Cylinder he says, Marduk has told me that I should let all the religions go back and build their temples. But Marduk is the chief god of his pantheon. Marduk. What? No, Mar Cheshvan means the eighth month. Yes, that is all it means. Yes, but Mar Cheshvan is not. It actually comes from Yerach Sheman, the eighth month. Yes, so for anyone who tells you that the month is Cheshvan, they're wrong. The month is Mar Cheshvan. That's one word. Right? It's not Mr. Cheshvan, and it's not Bitter Cheshvan. It's none of that. It's Mar Cheshvan. That's it. That's its name. Or... Or in the original, something like Marashwan or something, but I don't speak Akkadian so fluently, or at all, but something like that. But it's Yerach Shman, it means the eighth month. But you are correct, most of them are idolatrous names, but not this. Like Tammuz, sure. Tammuz is an idolatrous... Very good question. Look at the Ramban and Parshas Bo. Okay. It is a good question, but it's a shear for another time. I can send you Makarot. But you can start with the Ramban. So Shneamar, so in the story of Ezra, the locals in Israel at the time want to help with the building of Beit HaMikdash because they have been worshipping the God of Israel ever since they weren't worshipping the God of Israel, and God sent lions to eat them, and they said, huh, this doesn't seem good. So they started worshipping God, and the Gemara has a machloket about whether they were Gerei Emet or Gerei Arayot. Are they true converts or fake converts because of scary lions? So at any rate, they come, the Shomronim come, and they want to help build the Beit HaMikdash. And Ezra says to them, Lo lochem vilanu livnot bayit leilokeinu. No, it's not you and us. It's just us. Go away. Right? And this leads to an ongoing fight where they really don't get along, and they badmouth us to the government and put a pause on the building of Beit HaMikdash, and blah, 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 blah. Eventually, they have to get permission a second time. What? Presumably. So then they badmouth them to the government, they say that they're being seditious, so whatever, and then it goes back, and eventually they're allowed to rebuild under Darius. Yes, and that's exactly the point. That was a lot of trouble. Why didn't you just say, sure, I'll take your money, right? And then they wouldn't badmouth you. But no, instead you had to spit in their face, right? Lo lachem vilanu, right? It is not for you and us, it's just us. Go away. Yeah. What? We do assume that Ezra makes the right decision always, yes. Because Ezra is awesome, that's why. Everyone loves Ezra. Ezra is a Superman. Chazal have only the best things to say about Ezra. Literally. Meaning Chazal's assessment of Ezra is very simple. If Moshe hadn't given the Torah, then Ezra would have given the Torah. That is Chazal's assessment of Ezra. And they say, and that's why he changed the script in our Torah. Because before Ezra, it didn't look like the block letters, and Ezra's the one who introduced that because he was worthy of getting the Torah all over again, because that's how much we like Ezra. So, no, Chazal do not question Ezra. Ezra is Superman. Not only is he Superman, and not only do Chazal love him, Koresh, Cyrus says, I appoint Ezra as your spiritual leader, because he is the man. He is the Gadol Hador. You listen to this man about your religion, because he is the best. Everyone loves Ezra. Everyone says he's the Gadol Hador, from the Chazal to Cyrus the Great. Everybody agrees that Ezra is the best, so we don't question Ezra ever. We question everybody else. Moshe, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, everybody. But Ezra, no. Ezra is perfect. Interesting how things work out. But yeah, we love Ezra. We absolutely love Ezra. Okay? Ezra can do no wrong. Great book. Great book. You know, I mean, his counterpart is not like that. His counterpart, we do have some critiques of. Nehemiah ben Chachalia. But Ezra, no. Ezra is always right. Okay? Just assume that as a general principle. We love Ezra. So in this Mishnah, what do you think? Very good. So there's a specific case, namely the Beit HaMikdash, where non-Jews seem to be... they're unable to contribute obligatory things. But in the same breath, the Mishnah says, what can they do? Give voluntary karbanot. So they can't contribute certain things, they can contribute others. Right? So remember we said it's going to matter? It might matter what they're allowed to give? You were the one who said it. Right? Well, guess what? So does the Mishnah. The Mishnah thinks that it might... Now, you're right. This is not staka. Neither one is staka. But when it comes to contribution to the Beit HaMikdash, the Gemara assumes voluntary obligations, no. No, yes. Obligatory, no. There we go. Obligatory, no. Voluntary, yes. There we go. You would think I could get down the simple thumbs up, thumbs down, but no. You would think so. Very good. But this might support what? This might support, remember we said, if we find sources that it's valuable for non-Jews to give tzedakah, is that an obligation or is it not an obligation? Is it just a good thing to do? It could be how they present it, right? If it's just a good thing, maybe it is a good thing, but not an obligation, right? Very good, but this is not actually tzedakah, right? So on the one hand, we have to remember what we're about to read is the most expansive about non-Jewish donations, but not technically about tzedakah, it's about the Beit HaMikdash. And the Beit HaMikdash might be different in many ways. It might be worse to accept from the non-Jews, because as Ezra said, no, Beit HaMikdash is only ours. It might be better to take from the Beit HaMikdash for non-Jews, because it's money everywhere, because the Nevi'im say, you know, people like Yeshayahu, that the Beit HaMikdash is Vaviotim. Remember Vaviotim? Beit Tfilah Yikare Lechol Ha'amim. That it is a place of Tfilah for all nations, which means that maybe the Beit HaMikdash is actually better, because that's the one place where it is universalistic. So, better or worse, unclear. Very good. And the Gemara, did the Gemara like that? It didn't, but answer one, correct. One answer said Beit HaMikdash is different. The other one said, no, he's Chayiv in Mitzvot because he's an Eved, so he was okay, but a non-Jew wouldn't be. Very good. Yes, that was two answers in the Gemara. Correct. The Beit HaMikdash is different because only the government can do it. But you're right. It could have said maybe the Beit HaMikdash is fundamentally different. It didn't do that. Yes, Adam. No. This isn't on Cyrus. These are it was the non-Jews, it was the Samaritans in Israel. Cyrus just said, go do it. Yeah. It wasn't, but Cyrus did send money also, you're correct. But it's the Jews building it, it's the Samaritans that are being turned down. Okay. What? By Israel, right. Not by Cyrus. Cyrus doesn't care who builds it. I assume. Okay, so if you look at the Gemara in Erechin, the Gemara says, Tana Chada, Oved Kilchavim Shit Nadev Nidava Lebedek Habayit Mekablin Mimenu. V'tan Yidach Ein Mekablin. Are you allowed to take a contribution to the treasury of the Beit HaMikdash from non-Jews? Position one? Yes. Position two? No. Those are the two possibilities there. Yes or no? One of them. An Amar of Elah, Amar of Yochanan, Lokasha. Ha betchila, ha besof. And the Gemara says, they're not even in disagreement. Right? It depends. Was it batchila or basof? What does that mean? I don't know. Something. The Amar of Ami, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, betchila, afilu maim umelach ein mekabim lehem. Batchila, whatever that means, don't even take water and salt. Basof, but at the end, only, so, davar misuyam, ein mikablin, davar she'eno misuyam mikablin. Something specific, like they donate the aron. Don't take that, because you don't really want it to say the Christensen family our own. It's a little bit weird. But money is fungible. Right?
Is the difference like that in one case their purpose is to go directly to the Beit HaMikdash, which they're not allowed to do, but in the other case it's just money given to like the general population?
That's what it sounds like. Or to, right? So then the Gemara says, Heichi davi dami davar mesuyam. What is a davar mesuyam? So Amar of Yosef, kegon Why did this not come out good? Kigon, Amat Kalia. That is really getting blurry at that line. I'm just going to pull up my phone. It's too blurry. I'm sorry. This is the downside to trying to take, like, to use screenshots, is that it doesn't always come out very well. Say it again?
So I point to this idea, like, I wouldn't matter, like, I would be preferable to be paid with pure cash.
Well, I don't know if it matters with cash, but cash rather than objects, rather than they donate the aron to the shul, but a check is nice.
What?
Check is nice. Cash is nice. Okay, so but not a...
So this is going to be untraceable. It could just be...
Untraceable has some... That's a bit of a... That has some suggestive language there. I didn't say that. I didn't say, don't give them a tax receipt. No, I didn't say that. Money launder it so that no one knows where it came from. That's, you know, Ktsad Mugzam. What? Correct. So the Gemara continues. Dami Davar Mesuyam. What's a specific object? I'm Rav Yosef Gon, Amakalia Orev. Right, it's where they give. Oh, gosh. 1 second. Please don't do that to me. It's like popping up ads. I don't even know why. It's like a spikes for the roof, which get rid of the birds. Okay? Yes, on the Beit HaMikdash. Yes, the Beit HaMikdash had anti-bird spikes. What? No. No. It's in the Beit HaMikdash. I feel like Rami's mind is just blown. It's like, there's the Beit HaMikdash with the Aron, the menorah, and bird spikes. Next you'll find out it also had like cat traps and like, you know. Yes. 100%. Yes, indeed. So the Gemara says, Masa Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, V'igeret el asaf shomer pardes asher lamelech. But didn't Nehemiah ask for money from the king for the Beit HaMikdash? So Amar Le Abaye, Shaini Malchut Adlo Hadri Beit, Amar Shmuel, Amar Malchut Akarne Ture Akar Ture Velo Hadar Beit. The government is different. Because if the government says something, it will never retract it. I don't know what governments think. Chazal knew, but fine. What? So Nehemiah took money. He solicited money for the Beit HaMikdash. And the Gemara says, yeah, that's fine, because it'll be certain that they'll give it. Which might be... Right? Which, who knows what that means, but right, remember, the Gemara already said this by Herod also. Beit HaMikdash is different because the king might be the only type of person who can get the Beit HaMikdash built.
Well, is that something about the Beit HaMikdash?
Very good. So is it about the Beit HaMikdash? Is it about big projects? Is it about, right, versus little projects? Who knows, right? So Amar Yehuda Marav, Oved Kalam Mishivish Truma Mikiryo Bod Kenato Ibedat Yisrael Free Shatina Tin LeKohen VeImlav Tuuna Geniza Chayshinan Shemalivo B'Shamayim. If it's Truma, so if he gives, if a non-Jew wants to give Truma, so if he does it on, to be like Jews, so give it to a Kohen. And if he wants to give it to God, meaning he wants to give it to the Beit HaMikdash, then don't take it, because you don't know what to do with it. So Meitvei, the Gemara challenges, Ovdei Kochavim Shit Nadev Korah, Shem Kadavala Bot Kunoto. If the non-Jews donate a beam for a shul with God's name on it, we ask him, Imom Rudat Yisrael Ifrishitia Yagud. V'yishtamesh b'motar. So, if he says, I did it because a Jew told me to do it, so then what's the problem? Shem Hashem is on it. So you've got to cut off that part, put in Geniza, and you can use the rest. V'imlav, if not, tuna Geniza, and if not, we're worried he donated the whole part to the Beit HaMikdash, and therefore we have to put it all away, because we can't do it, we can't use it all for a shul if it was meant for the Beit HaMikdash. Chayshinan, Shema Libo, B'Shamayim, which says, Taima D'Shayim Katuv Aleha. It sounds like we're only worried that he's donating a Beit HaMikdash if it says Hashem's name, D'Bai Geniza. Ha'ein Shem Katuv Aleha Lo Bai Geniza, but if not, not. So Gemara says, no, Hu Adin D'Avagav D'Ein Shem Katuv Aleha Nami Bai Geniza. Even without God's name, it would need Geniza. V'akamash Malan, D'Avagav D'Shem Katuv Aleha Yagud V'Yishtamish B'Modra. The novelty is that, even if it has God's name, you can cut off part of it and use the rest. The shame shalom b'mkoma lav kadosh, because it's not holy since the name is in the wrong place. Ditnan, and I'm going to skip down a little bit. The Gemara gets into this specific case. What? Well, that's why I don't want to get into this sugya. So we'll leave it for now. Okay. Let's skip down all the way to vav amud beis. That's at the bottom of the page here. Then Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Ove kochavim sheit nadev menorah or ner levet haKnesset. If a non-Jew donates a menorah, like a lamp, not the menorah, a lamp or a single candle, adlo nishtakeh Hashem ba'aleha, aser l'shanota. Mishin nishtakeh Hashem ba'aleha, mutar l'shanota. As long as people still remember that this was donated by Mr. Smith, then you're not allowed to change it because they still remember it. Once people forgot who donated it, you can do whatever you want with it. You can change it. Now donor intent doesn't matter. So the Gemara says, Lamai, Ilema, Lidavar Shud, Mariovit Kochavim, Fieldsrael, Nami, Elo, Dvar Mitzvah, Vitaimit, Dovit Kochavim, who. One second. Again, I'm at the point where this is hard to read. So the Gemara says, "Ma'ir v'chavafil Yisrael nami." This should be true even of a Jew, right? You can't take something that a Jew donated and use it for something else. So elad var mitzvah. He says, "No, you're still using it for a mitzvah." V'taimid v'chavim hu depoy. The reason you can't change it is because non-Jews, if you change it from donor intent, they'll scream. Avo Yisrael d'lo poy shapir dami. But Jews, if you say, look, I know you donated it to the shul, but I needed it for the Beit Midrash, they'll say, yeah, fine, that sounds good to me. Okay, so, big gadol, without having looked at the Rishonim, this is the last Gemara that I want to look at, and then tomorrow we're going to have to start assessing this Rishonim. This Gemara, what do you say? Are non-Jews chayev, not chayev, mitzvah, not mitzvah, what do you say? So, it's talking about Beit Midrash and shul. And in the Beit HaMikdash and in the Shul, the Gemara clearly says, are non-Jews allowed to donate? Sometimes. Yes, but only voluntary contributions, not obligatory contributions. So now, what? Meaning they can't give a obligatory karban, that there is no parallel in Shul, right? But in the Beit HaMikdash, they can't give a chatas, asham, whatever. But any voluntary karban or donation to the Beit HaMikdash, so the Gemara assumes that they're allowed to give it to a shul. That's the latter half. In the first half of the Gemara, are you allowed to take donations from them? So the Gemara says, Batchila? Yes. Sorry, no. Basof? Yes. What's Batchila Basof? It could be in Lechatchila, you shouldn't take it, but the Avad, you can. Or it means something else, right? So, this last Gemara so far, what do we have? In this Gemara, is it clear that there are certain times when you're allowed to take money from non-Jews?
Yes.
Yes. Are they Chayav? Probably not, because you're only allowed to take it if it's voluntary. So this Gemara points to the fact that it might not be problematic to take from non-Jews, but it might be valuable, even if they're not obligated. But does this Gemara cause tension with the Gemaras in Bava Basra? Of course, because the Gemaras in Bava Basra don't want you taking from non-Jews. Here the Gemara is saying, you can. Now, Yonatan's right, that it might be different depending on the type of donation. So let me just summarize what you got to do tomorrow. Okay? Now your job for tomorrow, now that, as we did with Hezekiah, now that the problems should be jumping out at you, I want you to start pinning it down. I want you to pin down, are non-Jews chayev in staka? Yes or no? If they are, so work through the Gemaras. How does that fit into each piece? If they're not obligated, is there a mitzvah? If there is, what is the nature of that? Are there different types of donations? Keep in mind that we've talked about regular staka to poor people, staka to Jewish poor people, staka to non-Jewish poor people, karbanot, donations to the Beit HaMikdash, donations to the Beit HaMikdash's treasury, specific objects donated to a Beit HaMikdash, or the shul, and pidyon shvuyim. Those have all been in play. so far in the Gemaras that we've seen. I know that's overwhelming. I know that's a lot of things. I got it. But I want you to figure out, okay, what does all this evidence build up to in terms of question one? Remember, question one we need to deal with are they obligated or not? Two is, even if they're not obligated, is there a mitzvah? And question three is, why is there a problem to accept tzedakah from them? And according to this, let me just finish this. If they're chayev, then why is it a problem to let them fulfill their chiyuv? If they're not chayev, but it's a mitzvah, why is it a problem to let them do a mitzvah? If they're not chayev, so then, and there's no mitzvah at all, so what? Still, what's the problem? And the Gemara in Sanhedrin, why might there be a difference between public and private? And the Gemara in Erechin, what's the difference between taking batchila and taking basof? Right? What does that compromise position mean? Those are your very small tasks that you must start hammering out. Again, do not rush through these, okay? Meaning, these are the questions. If it takes us Tuesday. It takes you 5 days. I don't care. Whatever it takes, it takes. Yeah.
Did this Gemara ever say that even existing for non-Jews?
Never said it. Very good. So it could be you're allowed to take, but it's not good. And again, I want you to realize, and I'll end with this. This is not just some theoretical question. These sugyot are very, very relevant. And I just made a note of this at the end, right? These are the sugyot that are brought up when Christian Zionist groups want to contribute a lot of money to Israel. Right? These are the sugyot. This is a real question. This happens all the time. They give millions and millions and millions of dollars every year. This is not like a small little question. It's not like a theoretical. If a non-Jew wants to give $15 to your shul, can you accept it? It's if Christian Zionists on a yearly basis contribute tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to Jewish causes, to yeshivot, to shuls, to yeshuvim, to archaeological digs in Israel, to whatever. Can you, should you accept them, should you foster these relationships, avoid them? These are real shilas. A lot of the material that I looked at, though I didn't give it to you, I didn't torture you with actually reading all of them, are the halach lamaisa modern questions where people are justifying either why they think you shouldn't take the money, or why you can take the money, or why you should take the money. Right? These are real questions. Don't think that this theoretical question is, well, theoretical. It's fascinating theoretically, but it's also very, very practical. From? That, of course. That, of course. Okay, good?